RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So to Wellington City Council's problems and how it will work with the government's newly appointed observer. We found out about this last week here at RCR. To talk about the issues at Wellington Council, the observer, etc., Ray Chung, who is a councillor for Onslow Western for the Wellington City Council with a background in multinational companies in both hardware and software technological solutions. We've talked, I think, with Ray, it was back in March of this year. And that related at the time to the mayor's submission to allow Wellington mosques to broadcast the call to prayer from loudspeakers. Well, he's back with us again. Ray, welcome back to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay, so trouble at mill, as they say. Has this been, we'll get into the specifics in a moment, the observer being appointed, et cetera, and we've heard about the state of infrastructure in Wellington. I only recently moved out of Wellington, so I'm well aware, and I'm from Wellington, so I have a personal interest. It's my town. Has this been boiling away for quite some time, Ray, getting to this point?
I think it has, because And I think that it wasn't a surprise when they announced, when Simeon Brown announced that he's going to have an observer. I don't think anyone was surprised. It was sort of, it was pretty much expected. But and the observer is actually the lowest level that he could have done. I mean, it could have been a commissioner, could have been, you know, an early election. But an observer, I think, is good.
Okay, what's your feeling on to what level should Simeon Brown have gone to? Are you comfortable with this, or should he have gone further? What do you think?
Yes, very, very comfortable with this. I'm very pleased that we're going to go and have a look at the long-term plan again, because when we went through it earlier, we just didn't take anything out of it. And so, you know, people have got their pet projects in there, they're still there, and so we've got to take some of the big things out.
So what is fundamentally the issue with the long-term plan, the LTP?
The biggest problem is that we haven't taken any big things out of it. It's still the same as ever. We've gone beyond what we can afford. You know, 4 years ago, we were paying 4% of our rates were going into paying the interest on our loans on $400 million. Now it's $1.6 billion. We're going to have to borrow another billion next year. And this year we're paying 24% of our rates on interest only.
Wow. So, okay, quarter of the rates on interest.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And going up. Mm-hmm.
That's stunning, isn't it?
It is. And yet, we keep spending.
Who's driving the spending rate?
Oh, I'll say that mainly the Green councillors. Tory is leading this. You know, you might have heard that after we announced that we're going to have to relook at the long-term plan, she said, okay, everything's on the table. And then in the next breath, she says, oh, but these are my non-negotiables. My non-negotiables are social housing, climate change initiatives, the Golden Mile. So, you know, everything that she wants is actually in those categories. So, you know, how are we going to do it? You know, what is she willing to let go of?
Social housing's always been part of Wellington City Council, though, hasn't it?
It is. It has, yes. Correct, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
My own view is that I think that social housing should be a central government responsibility. You know, we're bleeding at, well, $30,000 a day. And so it's just very, very expensive for us. I'm not saying we should actually stop social housing, but I think that the central government should take it over.
Okay, I only mentioned that because that was the kind of low-hanging fruit on what might be a positive. In terms of climate spending, let's say related spending, are we talking cycleways and things like that, are we?
Cycleways, the organic recycling, you know, they're both very, very expensive projects. And I think that looking at the organic recycling, it's going to cost millions to actually run. It's we're going to have to get bins for everybody. And can you imagine having bins of food blowing around your neighbourhood?
Gosh, it's different from the days when I just used to go to the Wellington Tip and Happy Valley Road and dump anything.
Yeah.
Those were the days. It was a lot easier.
Yes, yes.
Now, as for cycleways, again, I lived over the road from one that was being made for over a year, disrupting everybody along the way. It seems that cyclists get a lot spent on them. How come they're not paying to use these things, do you think?
Well, I guess the way that the council looks at it is that they're also ratepayers, and so they're paying paying their share through their rates. But of course, only, what is it? It depends on which figures you believe, but 3%, 4% of Wellingtonians cycle.
Okay, well, that's not many. I mean,
no,
possibly I've paid my rates, but still have to pay road user charges, the car, et cetera. Yep. Okay, what about the airport shares? Where do they come into it in the LTP?
This is the strange thing about it. The whole idea in selling the airport shares was that we put it into a perpetual investment fund. So what we're doing is we're swapping one investment for another investment. So then, but now we're coming out and saying that we're 200 million, 300 million, 400 million, pick whichever figure you like, $600 million short. So we've got to take these things out of the long-term plan because we're not selling the airport shares, we need to get this extra buffer. And the buffer is actually for covering things that eventualities, things that may happen, the possibility of an earthquake. And so it's there as an insurance. Well, so we could not have the insurance, of course.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, because, you know, acts of God happen, right? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? In terms of any sale of airport shares, okay, that's the agenda now, but where do you sit on that?
I was opposed to it right from the start, not because I was concerned about diversifying our investments. I mean, diversification of investments is always a good idea. However, my biggest worry was that this council would just take that money and squander it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, whatever the interest bill per day you were talking about, that probably you'd burn through that over probably not very, very long time. The state of the infrastructure, Ray, is that because every city, you know, is under pressure all the time and no matter what, you're always going to have to obviously renew infrastructure. But again, going back to my memory of many decades in the city, things used to seem to work really well and things would run quite smoothly and you'd hardly ever see a burst pipe. I've seen dozens of them when I was there. How has it got to that, Ray? Is that just hands-off, not doing the work? Or, I mean, have you been hit by, you know, aging infrastructure that was always going to come through at a particular time? What is it?
It's exactly what they keep saying. I agree with you that when I was growing up, you know, we didn't get these problems. We didn't get leaking pipes everywhere. If you see a leak, it'll get fixed really, really quickly. So why are we getting this now? Now, it could be because the pipes are aging, but it could also be because there are more of us using these the drains, more of us putting water through, using the water. But that's not immediately obvious either, because if you look at our usage, we're actually cutting down on the amount of water that we actually use, not through any sort of conservation means, but we're just maybe it's because we're more conscious of not wasting water. So we're actually using less per person. So why are we getting all these leaks? Yeah, good question. But it's true that they are sort of reaching the end of life and they are sort of bursting. So they do need repairing.
You'd normally stay ahead of that, wouldn't you? And preventative maintenance, that's not a new concept.
Nope, I agree. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Wellington, we hear, is losing population, sort of bleeding population. What sort of impact does that have on finances, do you think, over time?
When we do our calculations on how much money is coming in, we don't take increasing population as a major factor because it's so hard to predict. And if you look at the census for the last 5 years, we actually lost 42 people in 5 years. So we're actually going down. Now, this is expected to reverse, you know, now that COVID is over and sort of more people are coming in. But you know, we're getting immigration, we're getting people coming into Wellington, but we're also getting people leaving Wellington. So we've still got a net loss. And I think there were some figures in the paper today saying that Wellington, I think, has gone up 0.02% or something. So very low.
All right.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm. All right. Working from home for public servants was obviously had an impact. We've heard of businesses, particularly in the hospo, that have had to close. Some big names, really sad. So the government has put out a directive recently cracking down on this. How much of an impact do you think that had?
I'm not sure that it's a large impact. It's used as an excuse for people not being in town. But I think that the general feeling is that there's people doing less spending. And so there are fewer people in town. But I think that a lot of these reasons are used as excuses for this is why businesses are closing down. This is why you know, so many coffee bars and restaurants are sort of not doing so well because we don't have those people in here. But yeah, I'm not so sure. Although I have asked council officers, I said, how many people, what percentage of people do we actually have working from home? And can we actually, would we be able to say, get them all back into the office to work from the office if we follow what the government's doing, if we do the same thing? And they said that we can't fit them all into the building. And so, so I said, well, hang on.
Yeah, what do you do?
but a few years ago when we had, when we, before this working from home came in, before COVID, you know, we had all those people in the building. So why is it that we can't fit them in now? So it's because of the increase in staff that we've actually had over those years. So, well, I mean, we've increased our staff by 27% over the last 4 years. But, and so that's why we can't fit them in, because we've got
a lot more
staff.
So the council has, or you're talking about the public service? The council's increased its staff by 27% over 4 years.
Yep.
Man. Yep. Okay, again, that's a sizable peak, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah.
Mm. All right, we're getting used to big numbers. Okay, a couple more questions, Ree, the Observer. The minister said he had advice from the Department of Internal Affairs that the council lacked an understanding of its own financial situation. Is that speaking to the Greens being profligate in spending, do you think?
I believe so, yes. There's I speak with Andrea Reeves regularly. She's our CFO. Very, very smart, and she's always willing to explain things, to discuss anything with us. So there's no lack of expertise from her part. But it's passing that message along. Now, at the last long-term plan, when we were sort of warned about our prolific spending and we don't have the revenue to actually cope with it, we just sort of twiddled around. We looked at, you know, $1,000 here, you know, $10,000 here, you know, chip that off. And she came back and said, you've got to take the bull by its horns and actually cut some of the big stuff out. Otherwise, we're going to be in big trouble. And so, but we didn't listen. And so we continued on doing those things. We didn't take anything big out of the long-term plan. So I just hope that people are scared enough now that they will do.
Can you give us a quick example of what would be a sizable item that needed removal?
Yep, there's the Golden Mile. Now,
yeah, oh, we know about that. Yep.
Yep, the Golden Mile, there's the organic waste. I mean, even buying 90,000 bins, I mean, it's just, to me, it's not
sensible. How much is it per bin, right?
I think it's 1.3 million buy the bins.
For the bins, there's a lot of bins. Yep. All right. Mm. Okay, and in your understanding, what will the government observer do? Just observe. And what right reports back to the minister? Is that how it works?
Yes, that's how it's meant to work. But in practice, I think, again, it depends on who they actually get. And so I would imagine that they'll do more than just sit there in the back of the room, you know, looking at what's going on. But perhaps that's what they will do. And perhaps they'll just take notes, observe, and then write a report back to the government. But my understanding is that they don't have to write a report back to the government until next February. So it's still quite a few months away.
Right. So everyone's on their best behaviour while the Observer's there,
hopefully.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, two final questions. Fellow councillors, who's on what side here, or is there a consensus that something has to give?
Quite interesting. When we, if you look at the beginning of the triennium, the divide was quite clear. It was the Reds and the Greens against the independents. But then two of the independents, you know, went over to the mayor's side and have been on her side since. And so there's really only been, I guess, the four of us that are, that work quite closely together, Diane Calvert, Tony Randall, Nicola Young and myself. And we were, of course, four of the Reading, or we call the Reading Four, together with Iona Pannett, who had the code of conduct taken against us. So, and the other independents, well, there's Sarah Free, but she's pretty much on the other side as well. So there's not many. But it was interesting that when we had the vote on the airport shares, we started working on what we thought was right, you know, rather than party lines. And so we had different sort of councillors sort of working together. So we had Nuruddin, he came over. I mean, he was the one that, that you know, put the amendment up. That was good. You know, so Terry O'Neill, you know, who's Labour. And so I think that we started looking at what we thought was right for the city rather than working along party lines. And so I think that was a very good indication that people were starting to look at the issues and look at what we should be doing for the city rather than thinking about, you know, what does our party want. And so if we carry on like that, I think it'll be good.
All right, last question. What's it like working with Tori Whanau, the mayor?
Tori has always been friendly, but she hasn't been very, let's say, she doesn't engage in a conversation about anything to look at how we're going to vote or what she wants to do. So she doesn't explain. Like I haven't had a one-to-one conversation with her for a year, maybe 18 okay. months. And so there's no sort of looking at getting to understand each other, to understand how each other thinks. And of course, unless you do that, then how do you work together?
That's leadership, yeah. though, isn't it? That's what leadership's about.
Yes, I agree, yep.
And how often would you meet normally with a mayor in your situation and have a chat?
Well, we'd see her at the meetings, that's just sitting in a meeting. But of course, it's not having a one-to-one. It's not asking what exactly do you think about these things. You know, what would you do? And what other things could you suggest? How would we do that? So there's none of those things.
All right. Interesting to get your view, Ray Chung, councillor, Onslow yep. West and Wellington Great. City Council. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul. Much appreciated.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.